Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Indeed, ladies and gentlemen, episode 265. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am Chris Featherstone. As always, follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling. Of course, Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, I've had back surgery and two childbirths in between the duration of 265 episodes, and I'm still here. We've made it every week. The reason why I say that is I'm recovering from the flu, ladies and gentlemen. How about that? That is exciting. The past week I've felt miserable, but I feel better now. I've got some good doctors and more than that, some good prayers. So thanks for everyone who are attached to my personal Facebook page. Thanks for all the well wishes. I'm not at 100%, but the show must go on, as I do every week. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I'm really, really excited about this interview. This is going to be exceptionally fun and exciting to talk to this former WWE star, and even beyond WWE. He's competed so many places throughout the nation, throughout the country, throughout the world, that his, 20 years of experience, a little over 20 years at this point, he's such a seasoned veteran, and still relatively young age. So it's my honor to interview and to introduce none other than Nick Eugene Dinsmore. How are you tonight, sir?
Chris, I'm doing great, brother. 265 episodes is a lot, my man.
It is.
Congratulations.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I celebrated 5 years WrestleMania weekend, so we're at 5 years and 3 weeks. 5 years and 3 weeks at this time.
That's cool.
Yeah,
spreading the good word.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was just recently looking at an old WCW match with Nick Dinsmore against Horace Hogan. And
he forearmed me in the face in that match, right in the nose.
Yeah, he
hurt my nose.
Yeah, that was no good at all. You know what the funny thing about that? I think one of the funniest thing about that match was, of course, you were enhancement talent to, I guess there's two funny things now because I just discovered this. I guess you were the lowest of lows if you're an enhancement talent to typical enhancement talent, because Horace Hogan was typically an enhancement talent of his own, but you became an enhancement for him. But yeah, so that was, I guess, the lowest of the rungs. But the funny part of that was Scott Hudson was really trying to put you over in that match, though. So kudos to Scott Hudson. He said, you know, Nick Densmore, you know, he's been doing a lot. He wrestled the Cat and the Rat, and now he's against Horace. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, it was a good time. 1998, 1999, I wrestled maybe 15 shows for WCW.
Uh-huh.
The Nitro, the Thunder, when they were on top. At the very first Brian Pillman Memorial Show, I met Terry Taylor, who at the time was working for WCW in the office, and he called me in. He got released, and then he signed me to a developmental deal with WWE in late 99.
Nice, yeah. And you wrestled for USWA for a hiccup, too, right? You wrestled Doomsday, which was Kane.
Yeah, I wrestled him as Doomsday, or the Unabomb or something, and then also as Fake Diesel.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. Yeah, Unabomb,
I wrestled him on a couple shows. Yeah, he did Smoky Mountain, he did USWA.
Yeah. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Late 97, like the last 6 weeks that USWA was around.
So are you there for the closing?
I no-showed the last show, but yeah, I was there.
Oh.
The very last show was the big one in Memphis, and I was supposed to wrestle PG-13. Flash Flanagan, and I was supposed to wrestle PG-13, and I no-showed him.
Oh, wow.
There was some backstage politics going on, and I was caught in between, but...
Got you.
Couldn't help it.
But Lawler was the executive at that time, right?
Yeah, Lawler, his name was on my check. The first check I got for doing TV was for $25. And I was so excited because I had Jerry Lawler's autograph on my check.
Wow. $25 for
$25 at UCB.
Wow. That was exciting. Sure it was a lot. Well, yeah, well, you know, and it's one of those things. I've interviewed so many wrestlers and listened to so many interviews. I mean, a lot of times that's motivating enough, you know, to keep going.
I grew up in Louisville. I grew up in Louisville, and the Memphis TV was on in Louisville. It was on every Saturday.
Yeah.
So I was on TV in my hometown.
Oh,
it was bigger than just the $25 or wrestling the match. I mean, I was on live Memphis TV, and a week later the broadcast was on Saturday in Louisville.
Yeah,
it was a big thing around Louisville to make it to TV.
Yeah. So you were in, so Danny Davis was over OVW when you were probably successful there, right?
Danny Davis started OVW in probably 93. I signed up with OVW in Louisville in 96.
Mm-hmm.
I wrestled for USWA in 97, wrestled for WCW in 98, 99, got hired by WWE in 99. The OVW, Danny Davis got the developmental contract about 1998 with WWE.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So what was it about you? What was it about Densmore that won 10 OVW heavyweight championships? That's phenomenal. And you won, what, like a dozen tag team titles, didn't you?
Oh, something like that. I don't know. I couldn't get back.
He lost count.
I don't know. I was there. I was a focal point of the story writing when Danny was training Clash, Rip Rogers was training Clash, and Jim Cornette was writing the television. You know, I was the top baby face ever. You know, my hometown boy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, plus at that time when all the WWE talent was there, I had more experience than most of them, all of them, and I was the one that was helping in the ring, train them in training sessions. As well as wrestling, you know, John Cena, Batista, Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton, Shelton Benjamin, you know, all those guys when they first started, I was wrestling them on TV.
Yeah.
And in the process, I won 10 heavyweight titles and 12 tag titles or whatever it is.
Wow, that's phenomenal, man. I can't think of anybody else that has had that level of success. I know I've interviewed Conway, I've interviewed Doug Basham, two other very successful OVW talent, but yeah, you're one of, if not the best, you're up there in the top. So that's awesome. So I'd imagine the success in OVW is what prompted the Eugene character, or was it just who grabbed you, you know, for Eugene and looked at you and said, "Perfect, that's he's going to fit the role perfectly."
Well, I pitched the idea to the writers and they didn't really bite on it, and I pitched the idea to the road agents and they kind of, you know, Arn Anderson and Dean Malenko and Fit were like, you know, that's decent, but you know, I think wrestling's kind of gone beyond this idea. So I just kind of shelved the idea. And about 6 months later, I was sitting there in a meeting with Vince McMahon and Stephanie. And Vince going, "I want to get back to character-based wrestling." This was 2004, early 2004. And I just spit out this idea for the character I had. And he was, "Great, we'll start on Monday." But I had no idea what the character was. Yeah. So it took some learning who Eugene was very quick. But it was. I took, at the time, everybody still wanted to be a strong heel. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to be Austin or Goldberg, and I wanted to be a comedy sympathetic babyface. I wanted to sell and do comedy because that's something that nobody else did. The only kids character that they had at the time was Hurricane. And at the time, Raw and SmackDown were split, so I knew that one show did not have a kids character.
Yeah.
So I looked around and what the locker room with the TV set was missing, and I tried to fill that void.
Oh, yeah. That's good business, filling the void. That's it. There you go.
You know, it worked, right?
Yeah, it sure did. I, you know, there's notable managers who think that was the worst part of your career, but a lot of people, including myself, you know, feel like it was your best. It was, you know, it was your most popular. I mean, you still go by Eugene in a different way. You know, you're the character, you know, over a dozen years later is still popular because, you know, people know Eugene and the matches, the really popular matches that you had, specifically against like Triple H and Kurt Angle, too. I guess two of your biggest matches. Also, your WrestleMania spot with Hogan and Hassan. You really did some awesome things in just 3 years on the main roster.
Well, you know, I helped train Muhammad Hassan. I was the first one to ever break him in the ring.
Nice.
I still wrestle with Daivari around the Midwest area, you know, currently. But, you know, I was in the ring with The Rock. I was in the ring with Hogan. I was in the ring with Cena, with Shawn Michaels. I wrestled Triple H. I wrestled Kurt Angle. I even pinned Vince McMahon one time.
Sure did. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah. It was a good run. It was a good run. Funny equals money.
There you go. Now, your match with Triple H at SummerSlam, you know, Triple H... like I said, I've interviewed a lot of people. Some people aren't really, you know, don't really have good things to say about Triple H. Some people has decent things. Some people have decent things to say about Triple H. Now, who was it that actually handpicked you to have such a prominent marquee match against Triple H at SummerSlam? That was huge.
I'm not really sure. Honestly, I'd heard that, you know, Vince wanted the storyline to go that way, but I don't know that for a positive. I mean, at that time, I'd really just kind of show up, and they would give me what they wanted. And we'd try to work out, you know, I try to make the best with whatever they gave me and try to make, you know, the best segment on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how strict was the writing at that time? Was it, you know, because nowadays it's script, basically verbatim memorized. How was it then? Did you have any type of wiggle room to improv?
A little bit. I mean, they would kind of give me a general outline because, I mean, Eugene was kind of off the rails and different anyway. And it was more William Regal and Bischoff that had to toe the line and tell the story. And I could just go and play, honestly, and let them react. But then they had to get back to whatever the segment was. So, I mean, collectively, I think there was a lot of imagination and a lot of liberty. But it was like we knew where we needed to go. And we knew the point that we needed to get and the time that we needed to hit it at. You know, and Eugene would be off. There was one segment that never aired. It was a serious segment where Bischoff pulls Regal to the side and is whispering something to him. And I was in the background just playing, and I found a fire extinguisher that was just in this closet. So I pulled it out, and both of them had their backs to me. So I just hit the fire extinguisher and blew it right in the middle of the tape. And both of them just, like, started busting out laughing. and everybody thought it was great, but for the tone of what we needed for the segment, we needed the segment to be a little more serious. So we never did it, but it was like one of the funniest times I ever had that never made air.
Yeah, that's really, really funny. And then Angle, I mean, what's the next year? I mean, 2004 SummerSlam, you Triple H, and then 2005 SummerSlam, Angle. I mean, one Hall of Famer, one future Hall of Famer. That's, like I said, those are huge opportunities for one of the biggest, you know, pay-per-views of the year. Was it the same just being there at the right time? Because there were some ups and downs as far as the Eugene character, but you still land in a major spot against Kurt Angle that year.
Well, Kurt from what I know, Kurt wanted to work with me. They knew Kurt was going to go on and wrestle Cena, so they wanted, you know, the big bad heel to get as much heat as he could before they wrestle the champ. And the most heat you can get of them is on the most sympathetic guy on the roster. So Kurt goes, you know, give me Eugene. And Kurt had some great ideas where he wanted to do something right before he started wearing the mouthpiece, where he busted his teeth and he had to have his mouth wired shut. Like Eugene accidentally hit and something busted his mouth. And then Eugene shows up with the gold medal that he won at the airport. We taped in the airport, and Kurt Angle comes out with the mouthpiece in, and it's all wired up, and he can't talk, so he's like muffling the sound, and Eugene comes out with the gold medal, so there's a big limo. You know, for the Olympic champion. Oh, you got the gold medal. You must be the Olympic champion. Get in the limo. It takes me to TV. And here comes Kurt Angle, like with the mouthpiece in, screaming, but you can't hear it. Oh, you must be the one that has to get on the short bus. Come on, let's get you to TV. But they didn't want comedy for what they were doing. So again, a good segment. Kurt came up with that one. It was a good segment that they never made air.
Wow.
But
yeah.
It was,
so there's
great work with
Kurt.
I mean, without a doubt, like one of the best athletes I've ever been in the ring with. And just to beat the bejesus out of me.
Yeah.
I mean,
but you beat
black
him.
Eye, pull my hair, beat me
you
down.
Beat him before there. That before then, though, you beat him on a roll.
Well, I wrestled Kurt. It was actually the night after Owen Hart died. Before Kurt was on TV, I wrestled my first dark match in St. Louis, and I wrestled Kurt before he was on TV. Before I was on TV, and I'd known Kurt for a while. But it was fun wrestling in that scenario. I mean, it was exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so you know, I guess basically the WWE kind of felt that the character ran his course, which was that what prompted the release mostly.
Well, I mean, I was under contract for good lord from 1999 to 2007.
Yeah.
And then under contract again in 2008, then as a coach again in 2013. So, I mean, I've worked, you know, 13 years over the past 20 years for them. I'd say that's a pretty good run. And never say never, you know, Perry Taylor told me that he was under contract 5 separate times. So, you never know what could come about.
Join the club soon, hopefully. Yeah, I tell you what, NXT is always looking for coaches. You were NXT. You were a coach at NXT a few years ago, weren't you?
Yeah, for 2 years, from 2013 to 2015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hopefully,
when Neville was there, Bayley was there, Sasha Banks was there, Charlotte was there, Kevin Owens was there, and the whole group that is on NXT TV now was all learning the ropes then. I helped train Chad Gable from day one. I helped train Braun Strowman from day one.
Nice. What did you see? I mean, did you see money in Strowman at that time?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. He had a different look. He was big. He was, I mean, a great athlete. He comes from a World's Strongest Man background.
Yep.
And he showed me films of him, you know, pulling the semi-trailers and throwing the kegs of beer and, like, all the strongman stuff. I mean, legitimately the strongest as an ox. And just the look and the intensity, without a doubt.
Awesome. Well, let the listeners know where to find you now. I know you have your own independent promotion, if I'm not mistaken.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Yeah, awesome.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota, the best little city in America. And MidwestAllPro.com, Midwest All Pro Wrestling. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube. We have live events monthly at the Icon Theater in Sioux Falls. We're training the stars of tomorrow. We've had past events. We had Damian Sandow running an event. We had Shelton Benjamin. We had all kinds of guys. Most recently, we brought in the Honky Tonk Man. He came in, had a big event for us, and we're gearing up for a big event in July. Our next event is May the 7th at the Icon Theater. MidwestAllPro.com is where people can check us out.
MidwestAllPro.com. How about your...
Chris, let me ask you, why pancakes? What's pancakes?
Well, I'm sure that you've had, I'm sure that you've pancaked people in your day, and you have fell victim to being pancaked in your day. A couple of reasons. One, it's a football term, as you know, for just, you know, flattening some. Yeah. And then on top of that, it was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek type of thing, because my very first episode back in April of 2012 was actually in the morning. So it was the flattening type of, you know, pancakes and power slams on top of the other variation of a pancake, which is like a morning type of theme.
Eugene loves pancakes. Eugene's favorite breakfast is pancakes. Have you tried the Kodiak protein pancakes?
No. Where's that from?
I'm trying to secure a sponsorship deal now with the Kodiak Pancake Company. And if you would try Kodiak Protein Pancakes, and all the listeners, Kodiak Protein Pancakes, I get them at my grocery store. I assume everyone else can too. If not, you can probably order them online. They're the most phenomenal pancake mix, and they make great pancakes. So I thought I'd throw that in.
Nice. Thank you for that. Yeah. Kodiak Protein Pancakes. That sounds very fun and muscular. Good stuff. Eugene, I really appreciate your time. And the next pancake I consume, which will probably be a Cinestack pancake from IHOP or some Cracker Barrel pancake, which I think is absolutely phenomenal, I'll keep you in mind.
All right, brother, man. Good talk to you.
Likewise. Midwest All Pro Wrestling, Nick Eugene Dinsmore. Thank you very much, and have a good night, sir.
Thank you, brother.
Bye-bye. That was really, really fun that he asked me that question as far as the pancakes are concerned. I've answered that many times on the show, but I think that's the first time that I've actually had, I think a couple of times perhaps, that I've had someone I'm interviewing ask me that. But, that was pretty funny. Yeah, the morning theme, and then, of course, like I said before, when I've answered that question, I changed it from the morning, Tuesday morning, to Tuesday evening. The numbers were decent on the Tuesday morning, the first one, and then the second one spiked. So we've kept it here ever since. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the show. Introducing co-host, he's back. Speaking of Eugene, he's the nephew, quote unquote nephew of Eric Bischoff, with a theme song of "I'm back and better than ever." Speaking of who's back and better than ever, you see how I'm kind of swirling all this to go to one final destination, and that is what does all those things have in common, and that is Evan Tech Proud from Under the Mat Radio. How are you tonight, sir?
Oh, brother, I'm good. It's been an honor.
It's
good to be here.
An honor. Absolutely. Yeah, man, it's great to have you back.
Yeah, it feels good to be back, man. It feels great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. So Gunner, he's, according to reports, he's a physical away from showing up on NXT.
Yeah, man. Can you hear me? I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. I was dealing with my Bluetooth. Yeah, we talked about earlier in my show. Gunner and I think Crazy Steve. He's good for him. I forgot about Gunner. I know he was good at TNA. I didn't hear from him for a while, but I always liked him. I always thought he was a good talent in the ring. He just you know, would need some exposure and need the machine to be after him, somebody to kind of like push him to the next level. But I'm glad he's going to NXT. It helps him out because he can be around a bigger audience, and the Don Show helps NXT out because they need new stars. All of the big stars are the stars of yesteryear now on the main roster, so they need new people.
Oh, yeah, totally agree. I think that – see, the thing is with Gunner, I've interviewed him on my show, really, really good guy. He's a lover of Jesus as well. The thing is about Gunner that I like is that his look could – they can do so much with just his look alone. They can make him a baby face, a really aggressive baby face like TNA did. They can make him a rugged heel like TNA also did at a point in time. There's so many things that they can do with his character they have so many options, and you know he's still relatively young, still in his mid-30s. I think he's probably like 34, 35, something like that. He's in a really good position, and I think that you know they can really do some really good things with him. I think as far as Crazy Steve, the character is so. See, that's the one thing about Crazy Steve. They're going to have to do the clown character. He'll be 35 this year, Gunner will. But the thing is about Crazy Steve is that he's so one-dimensional as far as his character is concerned that they have to be very careful with that because – I don't know how the clown character is gonna really work in WWE. I mean, they tried it before with Kazarni, and we see what happened with him. Kazarni or Sin Bodhi is his name in the Independence, but it bombed. I mean, it was just a flop and a half. But with Crazy Steve, it's the same way to me. I think the K helped him so much because when he first came, he was with the Menagerie, and that was still a circus-style, faction with Rebel and Knox or Mike Knox or whatever he was called his name, and Crazy Steve. Yeah. So it worked with that because that was a circus theme. I think they had Rob Terry in that faction as well.
Yeah, Rob Terry, yeah.
Yeah. And so it worked with that, and it worked with Decay, but by himself at NXT, it just doesn't fit right to me.
He reminds me of, and I like his work. He reminds me of those people that get supporting actors in movies where they're good actors, but they can't be a lead actor. They need that lead actor. They need that Denzel or that Bruce Willis or that that Mel Gibson or Halle Berry. You know, they're about B minus, maybe a D, not to use a Daniel Bryan reference. And that's what Crazy Steve reminds me of. He's a great character. The whole clown thing is cool, but either he has to be put with a manager that is over the top, which they don't have anymore, or he's gonna have to be with another tag team. And be with somebody that he can kind of work off of.
Yeah, exactly.
So, hey, you never know. Maybe WWE can find a brand new character. Maybe he'll catch fire. But I think him going to NXT helps him because that's like the minor leagues, and that gives him a chance to kind of get into it. So
the only thing that I think could help him if he did away with the clown character but stayed zany and joined Sandy.
No, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he'd do well.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Might as well. I mean, you know, he might as well. He might as well just plug him in Sandy. Why not? And then you got the Jinder Mahal. The reason why he received the push, according to the Observer, was to...
Jinder Juice.
Yeah, Ryback made a few comments on his physique. Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Real quick, the reason why I received the push was, according to the Observer, India has the number three most popular social media audience for WWE at this point. To help that, you know, demographic, they basically gave him that push. We'll talk about SmackDown in a little bit, but yeah,
I had some time while I was at work today. I was kind of getting a little snippets of what read different articles and listen to the fans of my show and of your show and read discussion boards what people were saying, and you know, people like, oh, he's Canadian, he's not Indian, and that reminds me, said, wait a minute. Last time I checked, anybody 9 out of 10 that plays a foreigner most of the time aren't from the country that they're portraying.
Right, at least aren't born
Nikita
there.
Nikita Koloff,
Minnesota,
and Barry Dorso is from Minnesota. They were not Russian. Ivan, our good old buddy Uncle Ivan, who you know, the good for the short term. I knew him personally, a good buddy of mine before he passed, was not Russian. The Iron Sheik was the exception. But I'm like, a lot of
Yokozuna was not Japanese.
Yeah, thank you. Yokozuna was not Japanese. Muhammad Hassan was not, he was Italian. He had an Italian background. He was not Arab.
Navarro is probably one of the only people who is actually Arab. Yeah.
Right. His brother actually, Iron Sheik actually is from Iran. My good buddy Nikolai Volkov, still going strong to this day. He's not Russian.
No.
So it's funny. It's like, come on, guys. Like, sometimes the IWC try to be so smart. It's like, come on, guys. So what, he's from Canada? If he has an Indian background or Indian pedigree, let it work. I mean, he has the ginger juice going on. His previously WWE is all about looks and about that muscle physique. Because just a year or two ago, look at physique when he's a three-man band.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I mean, I'm happy he's getting the push. I'm happy this is something different.
Yeah. Well, as Ryback said, there's exercise can do that, is basically what he said. So,
said the same thing about Triple H and Batista.
I'd imagine he's Ryback's definitely not shy to say stuff about Triple H. That's for sure. So, he probably don't care, and he's got a bunch of episodes left on his show to say some things about Triple H. He basically was throwing F-bombs to Triple H and especially Vince McMahon about, like, John Cena burying people. So he's definitely not the one who was scared to talk about that. Speaking of Vince McMahon, so reports say that he wanted Mauro Ranallo to be more like Michael Cole after initially agreeing for him to have his own style to make SmackDown Live different than Raw. So basically he was drafted to SmackDown just to really make them sound different. So one of the reasons why Tom Phillips became that fourth person was indeed to kind of squeeze and to kind of flush Mauro out, because Vince didn't like his style. He didn't like the Mamiya. I mean, I keep telling you, I'm a big fan of Mauro Ranallo. I liked him from the very beginning. It's, you know, I was sharing a couple weeks ago when I was interviewing Anderson and Daivari. I mean, I like it. I like the passion. You know, I don't think, why would Vince bring Tom Phillips because he sounds more like Michael Cole? I mean, to me, it just sounds, it's just ridiculous. Are you trying to take the life out of your commentary booth? I mean, if there's any standard that someone should, you know, commentate like, it should be Jim Ross, because he was the one who created the memorable matches. I mean, the thing is about Jim Ross is he saw, like, he made memorable matches. He made good matches
right.
memorable. You know what I mean? And that's
right.
that's the thing is with Jim Ross. When he, you know, who can ever forget him calling WrestleMania 20 at Madison Square Garden the triple threat match between Chris Benoit, Shawn Michaels, and
right.
Triple H? I mean, even
WrestleMania
14
WrestleMania
21. Of course. Yeah, 17 with Austin and Rock. You know,
I'll even say this real quick as a side note, similar to what we're talking about. Thank goodness that Jim Ross was the commentator for Taken Reigns, because that helped
I didn't see it yet,
so
man.
Much.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward
when
to
when
it.
You watch it, because me and you both was like late with our schedules of recapping since we were there live.
Yeah.
When you watch it, you realize like Jim Ross really helped that match, because if it was this Cole and Jibble or Byron Saxton or any comment, and I like Corey Graves, but Corey Graves, Jim Ross
yeah.
helped that match out. Just his voice
that's
alone.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, Michael Cole commentating that match would not, by any stretch of the imagination, gave it justice. I mean, like, not any stretch of the imagination. And I think with Jim Ross being there, and I'm excited. I mean, you know, I saw it live, so of course there wasn't any commentary. I've watched up to right now. I'm at the women's match, the SmackDown women's match. So I'm
okay. See right now,
I'm
excited.
I'm next to that's the next to last match. So. So yeah, I mean, it's and I'm really excited about hearing that, just because he just brings an entirely new layer to matches that Cole can't touch. I mean, he just really can't. Because when I'm thinking about Cole, when I'm hearing Michael Cole, it's like it just feels like a regular match. You know, like when people come out and. You know, when Goldberg or there's, you know, debuts or returns, you know, it's just that, oh, my, you know, and it's, yeah, it's not very exciting. But when, of course, when JR does it, you know, it's so cool, you know, and it's awesome. And I feel it. I feel the passion. It makes me more excited. It makes me more energetic, but you know, I think that Mauro Ranallo had the ability to do that with the passion that he brought to to the commentating
he
booth.
Did.
So yeah,
and
Tom Phillips.
It's funny.
Yeah.
I like Tom Phillips, and it's funny because we, you know, I just have Rich Brennan on my show who they actually let go because Mauro replaced him, and Rich Brennan talked about how, you know, how Marlon was so good, sometimes he could seem like he's a little eccentric. And I know for me, I never knew Marlon. I remember Marlon, I think he did some stuff on WWE Network first, if I'm correct, before they, because if you remember when WWE Network, before they had the network, when he was on the WWE Classics 24, if I'm right, Marlon was the one that was doing that whole draft. Remember WWE had that every year doing the NFL draft. They would do like the WWE draft for the bracket. That's when I first saw Mauro. And I didn't really wasn't watching SmackDown then, and I recently saw him commentating. I didn't know his name, but the way he commentated, he said, oh, head scissor, body slam. And my buddy Antonio was laughing, like, why is he talking like that? We would just crank up. But we liked it because it drew us in. It's the passion he's saying it. Mama mia, you know, all right there. This, you know, it's just the way he said song. It's the scissor kick, or, you know, it's the dirty deeds. The way he would say it, so we would just laugh hilariously, like, this dude is funny, but we could tell he had passion, and it was unique.
I've seen it before. Like, right. I've seen like, you know, when they have the shots in the ring, I can see the announcers, and I'll see Mauro Ranallo standing up. You know what I mean? Like, he's so into the match that he's standing up and calling it. You know, and it's like, that's the type of stuff that I would love to see. Like, you are in the match. You are marking out. You're calling this match as a mark, you know, because you love the sport so much. It just isn't a, you know, 9-to-5, clock-in, clock-out type of job to you. You know, it's just, like I said before, a couple weeks ago, it's not just another city or another venue or arena. It's just not that. Like, you get excited. You get to, like, it's like you're watching. And JR always says this. He's still a mark. You know, he commentates because he's such a fan of the business. And basically, he's doing what he loved. You know, he's basically watching a TV and calling it as he's watching it, and he's, because he's so passionate about the business. And I can see that with Mauro. Tom Phillips, I like him on NXT. Not a big fan on the main stage. And it's just, I like... I'm not opposed to Tom. I think Tom is definitely growing as far as, you know, just a commentator. He's not bad at all. I don't think he's bad at all. I'm looking for that element of just passion with someone. And I can't think of many announcers that are out there, just not color commentator, but just play-by-play. I can't think of any play-by-play announcers who are out there right now. You know, of course, you had like Mike Goldberg from UFC,
right.
But you know, he's Goldberg's good.
You know, we need to bring the good old Tony Schiavone. So, good old Tony Schiavone.
He's the one. I know Tom.
Yeah, I know, and he and people forget. You know, Tony was great. I like Tanae. Jesse Ventura was great. I even say this for the heck of it. Heyman, I mean, even though Heyman was more color.
Yeah, he's color,
I mean,
though,
this is in Vince. You know, Vince was great as a comment. I mean, Vince was a great commentator. People forget how great Vince was, the overall and the pay-per-views. Even if you watch the table, I was watching Table for Three last night with Michaels and AJ
Nash.
Nash. Mm-hmm. And they were showing the good friend, better enemies, and you're like, ah, oh, no, it was bad. That's right up y'all. There's also even Vince close to the jackknife through the, not even through the announce table that we know. I mean, we just the regular church tables. And it was like, come on, that's not every
What I love about two of the biggest things I love about Vince's commentary was. Oh man, I tell you what. Every time I would just be so just out of my mind, surreal, excited. Every time like a Survivor Series would come on, like welcome everyone. Like he kept saying that.
Yep.
Which was so funny. And it's like he would keep saying welcome everyone. You know, to the capacity crowd, welcome everyone to, you know, Los Angeles, California. Welcome everyone to the capacity.
I always say, it's funny because my correspondent Sophie and a lot of our listeners always love me execute events. Every time I hear Survivor Series or Rumble, I think of D.J. Oakland doing a voiceover with that music. Yeah, that's a Survivor Series. As a kid, just hearing that, and even the old Monday Night Raw, welcome everybody, come on, Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
A little siren. and that's how you knew. You just like, you know, Nitro was like, oh, yeah, Bischoff or whatever it was, Bischoff or Mondo or Kenan, Shivani or Tanae. So this go, but you know, Nitro came on different. It was so funny, but Raw was the old Raw. The silence, his voice is commanding.
Yeah,
but,
it is. The second thing I liked about Vince was he did the best two count cliffhangers. He's like, one, two, and no, no, no. Like, it wouldn't even kick out on that two. I love that he used to do that, man. He used to make the two count so suspenseful.
Yeah, it's you know the and that's something we're probably gonna talk about some next week on the show. Another segment is favorite Vince McMahon quotes. What is moments of the Vince McMahon commentating? Just and I have weird ones. I know everybody is gonna think some of the traditional quotes of the commentary, but I just have some that always laugh at Vince. And this Vince and this the perfect figure was Vince and Savage and Vince and you know, Vince Savage and Jim Ross. This was great times. Even through the bad years, 94,
95.
Yeah,
yeah.
Man,
this is Vince commentating. What about favorite? Yeah, go ahead. What was your quote?
So I want to check. The fake Vince laugh. And, you know, it was the Vince McMahon fake laugh.
Right. You know, yeah, that's hilarious. I remember he was in the at the Corporation. he was like, life sucks and then you die.
Life sucks and then you die.
Oh man. Yeah, that was
just
trying
to shake things up again.
Right.
And people forget it. In the interest of fairness, you know, that was, I can't say it like I want to on your show, but like Vince said it. Oh, you think you are? You know, I'm just kidding, man.
Yeah. Oh,
he said that during this.
And when he was, we used to do the bounty. It's time for the McMahon Top 2 Bounty. Yeah, the bounty was hilarious, too. Yeah, all right, so speaking of another Vince Russo thinks that Sasha Banks is in the doghouse. I wrote a piece on that, and he was basically just saying just the losing streak that she's on. She's not getting the push that she did last year. She said basically Vince Russo says that he believes that she ticked somebody off. And he said, I guarantee it that she's in a doghouse. So it's pretty bold claim there, Mr. Vinny Roo. But here's the thing, though. She hasn't been getting pushed, and she has been kind of at a standstill. I mean, there's been, you know, reports that she was supposed to turn heel before Mania, and then her other parts saying after Mania. It just goes to show the inconsistency of just, you know, just people being theoretical. I mean, I guess that's a part of the sheets. It's not true. It's just speculation, most of it at least. So, but, I mean, she's still a baby face, but she's still kind of, I think Vince was saying that she's like fourth down on the totem pole now, and that's really about true. I mean, because if you think about Raw, they have the champion, which is the champ is Bayley, and then you have the number one contender for this weekend, which is Alexa Bliss. We have to do the predictions as well. Then you have Nia Jax, and then fourth, which is Sasha Banks. So, and then I say below her is probably you have your Emma, your Dana, Brooke. So yeah, it makes sense about fourth down the totem pole. That's pretty surprising.
It could be that, you know, what Brother Bro says. He is a good point. Sasha Banks could be in the doghouse, or it could be the fact that we're dealing with the superstar turnaround or shake-up or draft, what are you going to call it, and Sasha Banks is already there. She has a fan base. We know her. She's multiple champs. So I think also if you maybe look at it, she's at the level where she doesn't really need to be in a hunt for the belt almost or be one or two. She could still be the third or the fourth. We should know our man Sting. You know, when Hogan the Savage came in, That man, all man was fighting Avalanche and the Butcher
in
a lights out match with the Guardian Angel and Big Bubba, Dusty called Big Bubba. So it is, I mean, can't compare to Stevie Sasha Banks, but.
Never.
I don't think it is necessary for her to be up top. After a while, I mean, I even heard some rumors of people saying he got kind of tired of Sasha Banks. I mean, her hair keeps changing different tints and shades of red. Her hair started getting red, and it's purple, and it's fuchsia.
Right.
And, like, she really don't need to be in the spotlight. You got Alexa Bliss, who these reliable sources told me they really don't like each other. Shoot. But you got Alexa Bliss, you got Mickie James, who is in WWE terms a legend, but you got to bring her in. You know, it's kind of like you gotta like they say, shake things up again. Sasha Banks is at a point now where she could be having, you know, downloadable matches that don't make sense, but you easily could plug her back into the main event spot and she'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I don't think she's too far gone. It's just that, it's time for somebody different now. Just like, you know, we'll talk about Raw and SmackDown. Looks like Charlotte's hitting a different route as well. That's interesting how they're doing that. So, and then, lastly, with the headlines, we talked about Table for Three. So Shawn Michaels' comments on why he won't return to the ring. I was actually writing a piece on that tonight, I'll finish it up here probably tomorrow. But basically he was just saying, on Table for Three, he was telling basically the viewers, and he was talking to AJ Styles. AJ Styles asked him the question, and he went on to explain to him, why he doesn't feel like it's the best idea to really come back. I mean, he was basically saying it doesn't make sense from a storyline standpoint, because he went out on top without anybody saying that you got to go, it's time to wrap it up. His career didn't drag on too long. He's 51 now. He stopped in, 26? That was 7 years ago, so it was, 44? I mean... what can you say about that? So, 44 years old, retiring, that's a big deal. And retiring on top, after over 20 years in the business and nearly 25 years in the business, and, 44 is a very good age to retire. And for the past 7 years, I mean, with the exception of some, guest referee spots and that one spot that last year, when he came out, 2 years ago, he came out with it was last year, it was 32, when New Day lost against the League of Nations, and then him, Austin, and Foley came out. So he had some interaction at that time. But, I mean, as far as the wrestling, I mean, he's one of the only, I can't think of another person, unless they're forced to because of injury, I can't think of another person who's actually stayed out with their retirement.
Like I said, I say what you want about Nash, and I got to meet Nash a few times. Nash is a cool guy. I thought Nash was getting a ring for his size, and I always love Michaels and always love AJ. Michaels is right. I don't know about you, but I kind of felt a little let down through that Table of Three, because I felt like it was so much more that he could have covered. Nash didn't really talk much. Nash is always hilarious. I love Nash's sense of humor. And Mike, you just can't. Cause there's so much you can talk about with them three.
Yeah.
But what Michael said is,
and
they'll
limit those things in 20 minutes too.
Right, when I had Tully Blanchard on, and he didn't say this jokingly, but we did end up laughing. I asked him, say, we did the Table for Three with the Horsemen with Arn and Flair. So this is the first time they sat together in 15 years or something. Mm-hmm. I said, was any of that edited? He said, well, he said it was on the network for 30 minutes, and we sat down for 31. I know this was my favorite all time on my career in radio, it was just like they recorded it for 30 minutes and we sat down for 31.
That was funny.
But what Michael said is right. Is
yep.
When he explained it, it made sense to you. He went out on top. You know, he went against Taker. He told the story of, I started with the glass breaking with Jannetty.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like I went out when, and I told, and I'm gonna go back and watch the match probably tonight or tomorrow. I forgot how he slapped Taker, how he like made Taker.
He was crawling up
him.
He was crawling up and slapped him. Yeah.
Just slapped him, and how Taker, you know, the story of how Taker had to jump for a few times. He actually jumped and did a jumping tombstone to end it. And like Michael said, I'm retired. That's it. I'm done. You're not going to be a Savage, and I love Savage. You're not going to be a Flair. You're not going to be a Hogan or Charlie Funk or anybody else that retired and come back and retire and come back and shed tears and sniff and snot and come back. And Michael can still go. And one thing I love what Michael said is just because you can still do it doesn't mean you have to.
Right.
You know, if you can go out on top when it's on your own. And I never understood that being a former athlete. I never understood it because me, it's like, why would you go out on top? Like, I would want to win another ring or whatever championship. It makes sense. You know, Peyton Manning did it. You know, Ray Lewis did it. You know, anybody in sports lore. Gretzky, I think Gretzky did it. You know, you win your champ, Jerome Dennis, you win your championship or wrestling, you have your big match at Mania, and you go. You don't want to be, and like Michael said, it makes sense. What would it profit me to come back to face you, AJ, because if I lose, you know, it's like at the end of the day, like, how is it going to create my legacy? I ended my legacy with Taker. So what's the point of me coming back? So not to take it that, I didn't mean to take it that much time. I really loved when Michael broke it down. And, you know, with AJ agreeing, even Nash saying, yeah, that makes sense.
I 100% agree. I agree with everything that Michael said. It makes perfect sense. Because here's the thing. If AJ Styles, I mean, he said this, basically, if AJ Styles beat Shawn Michaels, then what? I mean, what does it do? I mean, like, I beat Shawn Michaels at Mania. Okay. He's not coming back. You know, fans know enough to, you know, to understand that there's a really good chance that Shawn Michaels is going to return. He's going to put AJ Styles over. So there's no surprise element in it if he does lose, because he's expected to lose because he's the legend putting the main roster guy over. So there's no benefit at all for Shawn Michaels to come back just to have a match to tickle people's fancies against AJ Styles, and there's no end game to it. There's zero end game. I mean, it's like you come back for one time, you go against AJ Styles, you tear the house down, but still at the end of the day, it really didn't help either person, because beat Shawn Michaels, but okay. So that doesn't propel you to main event status because you're already a main eventer. So AJ doesn't need Shawn Michaels to put himself over because he's already over. So usually those legendary people, you know, like for instance, Roman Reigns didn't necessarily need Taker to put him over, but Taker is so he has so much stock in his character that he took Roman Reigns to a whole other level that nobody else. I mean, Brock Lesnar beat him, but he was a part-timer and legendary already. No other person has ever been on the level as far as a part-time, you know, main roster, full-time, I mean, as far as a full-time main roster guy, no one has ever done what Roman Reigns did. No one ever. No full-time wrestler has ever defeated Undertaker at WrestleMania. So he's on a different level. But with Michaels and AJ, I mean, it really wouldn't have done much. I mean, AJ beat Shawn Michaels in a great match.
Michaels goes away, and instead of me thinking about his last match in a retirement match, one of the best matches of all time against Taker, who's now retired, so it just means, you know, even more. My last match that people are going to think about is against AJ Styles. So I wasn't a big fan of it.
Yeah, with you, and like my friend was saying, if I could have just got a hold of you, you know, earlier,
yeah,
in life.
10 years ago, yeah.
It's the same thing, you know. Flair always says, he's always told Triple H, is like, if I could have just got a hold of you and wrestled you 10 years prior to Evolution.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, I have to say, I really don't think that match would be all that great. That's just my opinion. I mean, nothing against Triple H. I mean, get a seat in that game, and I always enjoy Flair work. I just don't think they just meshed it. I just don't think they would have had good chemistry wrestling a straight off match. I mean, Flair and Rude, two of the greats, didn't have the best chemistry together. But anyway, I agree with what Michael says.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, take is gone, and you know, we you know, people lamented and cried and sniffed and snot, and we didn't cry, but we saw that gut punch. And you know, I felt the same for Michaels. I think Michaels and Taker, only team that when it was over, I was like, "Dang, man, that's it."
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, Sting isn't done yet. I'm not claiming that.
Let it go, brother. Let it go. And this is coming.
You got to go out on top. Not get his neck hurt.
Yeah.
He got to go out on top. Have him face Cena. Have him face the Rocket Mania.
No.
Have him face something.
Gotta let it go, man.
Braun Strowman.
And this is coming from the biggest thing mark of them all. It's time to
And I'll say, I'll eat crow here on the show. Well, you know, me and you being the biggest thing marks.
Yeah.
I have to say, officially, and I've been holding on to faith since 2002. Holding on to this faith for what now? 14, 15 years.
Yep. Yeah.
I guess we won't get to see Sting and Taker.
No, we're definitely not going to see that. I certainly don't want Taker to come back, that's for sure, after what we saw at Mania. If he come back, I would be upset. I mean, I think he deserves to get booed if he comes back, because that was such a good send-off. You can't beat a send-off like that. You just really can't. Like you said, you know, with Shawn Michaels, I really think, like, the funny part about that was, I'm the type of dude that didn't want Taker Street to end ever. But the funny thing about that is, a big part of me actually wanted Michaels to beat Taker at 26, because I didn't want Michaels to go. I knew it was about that time, you know, his hair was receding even more, and you know, he was just ready to go. I understand that, but Michaels was such the man. You know, he was such a good performer. It's such amazing to see him in the ring. He's really one of a kind. I didn't want to see him go, you know, but it was a great send-off because, you know, he hasn't came back. And I think, you know, Taker's going to be the same way. So, all right, Raw and SmackDown. Raw and SmackDown review coming up. So I've actually had fans of the show ask if I could
review, do a match by match review of Raw and SmackDown, just in case they missed it. I used to do that on my show every week, but because there's so much to talk about, especially with the headlines, I don't anymore. It's just basically just a short rundown. But this is what I'll do for my fans of the show. I will do the Raw results and the SmackDown results as well. So with the highlight reel, Chris Jericho interrupted by The Miz, turns into Miz TV, interrupted by Dean Ambrose. Then you had Matt Hardy defeating Sheamus, Austin Aries and Jack Gallagher defeating TJ Perkins and Neville, Kalisto defeating Braun Strowman in a dumpster match, Dana Brooke with Strowman destroys Kalisto post-match and then dumps him in a dumpster and pushes him off the stage. Dana Brooke defeating Alicia Fox.
Even a stage.
Yeah, it was kind of like a little lift, a little hop.
A little step.
Right. You had Dana Brooke defeating Alicia Fox, Emma coming out and hugging Brooke. Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Big Cass, and Gallows and Anderson, defeating Gallows and Anderson and Samoa Joe. Then Alexa Bliss had an in-ring promo interrupted by Bayley. Then Sasha Banks defeats Alexa Bliss by countout. Apollo Crews makes his Raw debut against defeating Curt Hawkins. And then the main event was Chris Jericho and Dean Ambrose going to a no contest with Miz and the mystery partner, which was Bray Wyatt. Wyatt appears at the end of the match and then takes out Ambrose and Jericho. Miz places his hand on his shoulder, thinking they're celebrating together, and he also gets his sister Abigail. Real quick with SmackDown, Shinsuke Nakamura has an interim promo interrupted by Dolph Ziggler. That went forever. Ziggler kicks Nakamura. Nakamura puts him in the reverse exploder. And then Ziggler rolls out and goes, and then Shinsuke Nakamura does his patented "Come on!" I love what he does. Then you have Styles defeating Corbin. KO comes out. Well, he was in the announcer's booth. He attacks AJ. Zayn comes out, tries to make the save, but he doesn't. That didn't go too far. American Alpha beats the Colognes in the Beat the Clock Challenge. And then Rand Orton and Eric defeated Eric Rowan. That was long. It was a pretty good match, though. And then Jinder Mahal comes out and talks to Orton. Singh brothers come out and help Orton. Well, they help Jinder Mahal best Orton. Breezango, they defeat the Ascension.
They came back.
They defeat the Ascension, and now they're the number one contenders for the tag team titles. And then at the end, it was Naomi versus Charlotte. That was a no contest. It was a good match, actually. That was a no contest because Natalya, Tamina, Carmella, they jumped both of them. So it looks like a babyface turn coming for Charlotte. And we may have a heel turn coming from Becky Lynch because she still didn't come out. She interviewed, and then the three women that jumped Naomi and Charlotte, they basically, said, are you with this or against this type of thing? Still no Becky Lynch. So if Becky does turn and Charlotte turns, there'll be four heels to two faces. So
yeah,
that wouldn't make any sense to me. But, I like Becky. I think she should stay babyface, but her turning heel wouldn't be too terrible. Maybe she can turn heel for a little bit to pretend that she's with the other three and possibly evening out or something like that. That could possibly happen. But these factions of three, you know, they made a mistake doing that with the Divas Revolution. So it looks like they're having Natalya, Carmella, and Tamina, and Ellsworth as some type of faction.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So what's your Raw and SmackDown takeaways?
If you really want me to do a takeaway, Raw will be the last half an hour because I didn't get in for work too late and seeing my mom. But Raw was okay from what I saw. And you have a dumpster match, and the dumpster just falls off like a little step, a little left. It's like, okay, like if you actually had the Raw set from Attitude Era, it made sense. You know, New Age Outlaws did it with Terry Funk. But spoiler alert, Terry Funk was Chainsaw Charlie for Mankind. That made sense.
Yeah.
But it's falling off a little left, like the dumpster didn't flip over, just kind of just doof. But
yeah.
This is okay. It just I love what the Miz does. I don't know about you. Angle looks kind of weird as the GM. Angle walks like an old church deacon, but that's because
he does. Back. He's got like the top, yeah. He got like the back angle type of walk to him.
Yeah. It's because of his neck, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's really.
He's small. Has he lost inches over the years?
Okay. Remember, you remember Featherstone? I mentioned this to you, I think, last year or so when I first started doing the show. I mentioned to people, guys, my man Kurt Angle has lost weight. And you really don't realize it. I realize it because I've interviewed him in person. I've met him a few times at shows. If you look at Angle, when he was Angle in WWE, when he was in his prime, look at Angle, how buff Angle was, 0203. Look at Angle with his TNA run. You see how smaller he got because he wasn't on the painkillers. He wasn't not really juicing, but he wasn't on a little pill. He got incredibly leaner. Now you really get to see it, the fact that he hasn't been wrestling as much, he's still working out, and now that he's around the big people, the WWE, now you really see how small Angle is now. And it's not
His matches with Taker, Kane, Lesnar.
Right, think about those.
Show.
Right.
He still didn't seem as small as he was.
Because remember,
like everybody's taller than he was. Like, he was the same height as Maurice.
Yeah, you got to look at that. It's you really, and you know about working out, missing weights, and I work out too. With Angle being, Angle's not really a tall guy. With Angle being so wide and so not Jack being so fit,
it creates an illusion. Yeah.
It creates the illusion where he's not, he wasn't, you know, he was, it was like Bret Hart. Bret Hart and Michaels aren't really the tallest people, especially Bret, but he had solid builds. So even though he wasn't the tallest guy, he wasn't the shortest. It says Angle went to TNA, I'm sorry, Impact Anthem, Impact, the OWL. Performing on his TNA, OWL.
For Angle, life.
Yeah, for life. Angle lost weight. He got leaner. He didn't really have to carry as much muscle mass. So and I actually enjoyed his work in TNA. But now, like you said, with him being around the Giants, he's on Raw, you got Strowman, and he even looks smaller than Seth Rollins.
Yes.
it's like, oh my God. So, I think it was amazing.
He kept being next to people, and I was like, okay. So he has to be taller than Zayn. And Zayn was dwarfing, you know, Zayn was towering over him. And I was like, okay, come on. He has to be taller than Nia Jax or Maurice. And he was like looking face to face to Maurice. I'm like, what is going on? Like, Miz is deceptively tall. So I wasn't necessarily expecting him to be bigger or taller than
Miz isn't really a small guy.
Right, but the Miz was like, he was like towering over him. I'm like, no, there's no way. And I was just every single person that went next to Angle, every time they went in the office, I was like, man, he is, like when Jinder Mahal was still on Raw, man, it's like he was looking up completely to Jinder Mahal.
Yeah.
Jinder Mahal, he's tall. He's deceptively tall, too. He's about 6'4", solid 6'4". But, you know, I'm 6'1", and I wouldn't be looking to, you know, Mahal. I wouldn't be looking up to him. You know what I mean? Like, there's only about a three-inch difference. So he's taller than me, but if we stood at a face-to-face, it wouldn't look, you know, too uneven. But with Angle, though, I mean, he's built as 6 foot. But I'm like, I doubt that. I don't think he's 6 foot. I mean, he can still take anybody out in that locker room, but, you know, he may be like a 5'9", 5'10" at this point. He may have been 6 foot.
Yeah, I'm 5'9".
Yeah, I'm 5'9". Yeah, you're about a 5'9". Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, very interesting stuff. I couldn't stand the end of it, though, with Bray Wyatt. I just, it made me so upset. Why would you have, okay, so the mystery partner is Bray Wyatt. Okay, I understand that. I wasn't like terribly upset about that. But first of all, I made Jericho look weak twice in a row because he lost cleanly by tap out last week, and then he gets his sister Abigail this week. He's on his back 2 weeks in a row, but for some reason he's the number one contender for the U.S. title on Sunday, but he's on his back 2 weeks in a row against two different people. How in the world? And not one of those people are Kevin Owens. How in the world am I supposed to, you know, think that Chris Jericho is building any steam to win the title? I mean, just this is so convoluted. This whole superstar shakeup around this time is so stupid, so convoluted, because you have Jericho on his back twice in a row, and then if he loses on Sunday, which we're about to get to the predictions real quick. If he loses on Sunday, that makes him look even worse because he keeps losing, and it doesn't help the prestige of the U.S. title, because even a challenger is supposed to lift up the prestige of the championship. So I think that was so stupid. And then you take the heat off of Bray because he was getting booed. You take the heat off of Bray by have him sister Abigail one of the biggest heels on the roster. That was so stupid to me. I was just
when
like,
was that?
Oh.
I missed that. I watched Raw. Maybe I'll turn
it
down.
It was at the end when Miz celebrated with
Bray.
Oh,
you're right.
He put him in his sister Abigail. I'm like, what are you doing? Miz, he sort of slid out of the ring, and because Bray was legitimately getting booed after he did that to Jericho. And, he did Ambrose on the ramp and then Jericho on the ring, and he was getting booed. And then they just totally ruined it. They just totally pooped on it and said, okay, well, let's just make Bray look better. But it made him look worse because you want to make him a heel, and he ended up being cheered at the end for, rightfully so, giving the biggest heel, one of the biggest heels on the main roster, a sister Abigail. Of course you're going to get cheered. I mean, simple arithmetic here. I mean, you know what? For that, this is what the writers.
Dummy, yeah.
One more.
Dummy, yeah.
Yeah, that's the writers for you.
It's funny because when did I text you at the end of Raw for like 30 question marks? I'm like, what? You had Payback, which is a great movie about with Mel Gibson, by the way. Please check it out, Payback, with Mel Gibson. Payback this Sunday. It's you have this superstar shakeup slash draft slash we don't know what else to do, we're confused.
Yeah.
And you have these guys go to Raw or SmackDown, but yet they're still continuing feuds that we had from the previous shakeup, And now you also got matches for Raw and SmackDown happening on Payback. So now
yeah.
it's kind of like a
cross-brand.
Cross-brand show, which you guys
yeah.
didn't promote at all. But
exactly.
now you have guys who are on Raw, still who are on Raw now, still carrying on that feud from SmackDown and vice versa. What is Bray Wyatt? What's going on with him? And you have, which I really love what The Miz is doing now. I like Jericho. Dean Ambrose is there. I'm sorry. He just looks dirty, like a dirty biker. I can't take a bath in weeks. And,
right.
and not only that, they cried. And they said, I didn't see the first two thirds of Raw. But to me, from getting in the house watching, it seemed like the crowd was so dead. And it's like, you know, you got The Miz. I love what The Miz does. I love what Jericho does. I don't hate Ambrose. But he's just like just going through the motions. They beat up Miz. You have no heat. Nobody cares. And then Bray just shows up on top of an announce table. Why are you here, Bray? Just remember, 2 weeks ago you downloaded and popped up saying encrypted messages to Finn Balor. So, like, okay, you're going up to Finn Balor for what? We don't know because you're Bray Wyatt. You just randomly attack people. We had nothing to do. You show up on SmackDown attacking Orton. Now you show up being a Miz tag partner, which we still don't know why you're even tagging with The Miz. You do a bad Sister Abigail on Dean Ambrose, which is just so whack. You attack Jericho, and you attack The Miz. So within a week, within 2 weeks, you've attacked a good 5-6 superstars. For what?
Yeah.
No one.
No
excuse me. I didn't get a chance to watch SmackDown at all because I was on air doing my show and other things. But this Raw is just so confusing. And I always tell people, if WWE's pay-per-views are bad, it gives us something to talk about and we can laugh. It gives us comedic material. And if it's good, it gives us something to talk about either way because of how great Payback is. And
yeah,
this show is
Payback,
confusing.
Yeah, it was definitely very, very confusing. All right, real quick, Flavor of the Week.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
With the predictions, but real quick, just five people I thought would have been good WrestleMania opponents for Shawn Michaels. Number five, I thought Finn Balor would, just because of his entrance, and I think it would have been interesting to see, because he's small too, but yeah, it would have been interesting to see him and Michaels as far as how their dynamic is. Number four, Seth Rollins, I think they would tear the house down. Shawn Michaels actually said he wants to fight Samoa Joe. He would have if he was still around. Number two, AJ Styles, of course. And number one, I put Braun Strowman because I like the David and Goliath feel. And Michaels always, you know, was a good person for that. And he, you know, Taker, Kane, Vader, Nash. You know, he's always been that guy who had that, you know, good David and Goliath type of feel to it. All right, let's get to the predictions, ladies and gentlemen. Let's start off with the pre-show Enzo and Cass. How you doing against Gallows and Anderson for the 469th time? What do you have?
Gallows and Anderson. I think they should win. Enzo and Cass will probably win. Just for the titles. Oh, sorry, they don't have the titles. I forgot that.
No, there's no title.
I say this. Enzo and Cass will win, but I want Gallows and Anderson to win. Enzo and Cass to me is just, I like Enzo and Cass, but, you know, after you put the mic down, it's like, okay, I don't care anymore.
I got Enzo and Cass because Gallows and Anderson won like a week or two ago on Raw, so I'm cool with it. I like Enzo and Cass. You know, Enzo's not a good worker. I mean, he's good on the mic. He's not a good worker. Cass is money to me. I think he's good. I think he's getting much better on the mic, and he's a good worker. So. All right, Bayley and Alexa Bliss for the Raw Women's Championship. What do you got?
Bayley.
I agree. I think they're trying to build this Bayley and Nia Jax match. So, and maybe eventually, maybe, you know what? We may get Bayley and Nia at SummerSlam. The next year may be Bayley and Sasha Banks. We may get a Sasha turn at the Payback. So watch out for that. Rollins and Joe.
You gotta have Joe win. You gotta. They're gonna be feeding for the next couple months anyway. Give Joe to win.
I agree. Yeah, I think Joe wins it for Rollins to have more of a chase type of feel. Neville and Aries for the Cruiserweight Championship.
Neville again. Keep Aries. Keep Neville in the Hill Champion and keep Aries chasing it.
I think Aries wins since he lost clean at WrestleMania. I think he would lose clean twice. Even if he loses 30, I think losing twice, two pay per views in a row, doesn't really elicit another rematch. Who do you got? With Hardys against Cesaro and Sheamus?
Hardys, of course. I mean, the Hardys got the titles. Keep that merchandise rolling.
Exactly, yeah, I think so too. The House of Horrors match, man, between
WCW
Worlds and Randy Orton for the WWE Championship.
Who's going to win?
Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is going to
win? That's saying that's the match he's winning.
House of Horrors match.
This ought to be over. Nah, Orton's winning. Brie's not getting the title. He's going to go back. He's going to go to Raw. Born Orton's going to win. What do you do, Orton? Nothing. But just walk to the ring slow, wear hoodies, and do the same three moves.
Yeah, they're going to set up him. They already set up him in the hall. I might as well just. I mean, they spoiled that match. Of course, Orton's going to win.
Ginger juice.
Owens and Jericho, U.S. Championship.
I'm sorry, I really don't care about this match, but Jericho's going to lose. Owens is still going to be the U.S. champ.
Yeah, Owens is a champ, and Jericho is going to lose and ride off with Fozzy. I love the Friends of Jericho. I think this has been one of Jericho's best runs, I'd say. Been around for all these years and still one of the best. All right, last but not least, Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns.
Is this the main event?
They're looking to. This may be the main event. They're looking at either this or Orton Wyatt House of Horrors.
You got a main event, Reigns and Strowman. Sad to say, Reigns is going to win because he's going to have to get.
I think Reigns should win. But I don't think he will win. I'm
with you. I'm sure he'll win. See, but they're going to have Reigns come, you know, the story of Reigns coming back from the Gurney incident, blah, blah, blah.
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to make him. I think Strowman's going to win. Unfortunately, I think Reigns should win because him losing, you know, the same month as he beat The Undertaker, I think that's stupid. I think that's so stupid. Beating Strowman won't hurt him, although losing a dumpster match to Kalisto was stupid. Reigns should not lose this match because it just takes the heat away from him to The Undertaker. It just takes it away, and it's just going to make me upset, but I understand they're pushing Strowman, and I appreciate that. I like it. They're doing a good job. But Roman Reigns shouldn't be the person he should be going against. I think they should have done a rematch with the show. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see what happens at Payback. Thank you to Eugene Dinsmore for the wonderful interview and the awesome stories that he said had never aired on TV. So that was very interesting for him to share. Midwest All Pro. Evan Tech Prout. Let them know your Twitter handles.
Thursday, everybody, under the Mets Radio. On Twitter is at @Tech_UTMR. Follow us on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, Instagram at Under the Mats Radio. Live every Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. You can listen to our archives on YouTube.
Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen. Until next week, enjoy Payback. Enjoy the week of wrestling. God bless you all, and have a great night. Goodbye.
Yes, thank you. Good night.